I'm Barbara Sills Nevergold.
And I'm Peggy Brooks Bertram.
And we are the co-founders of the Uncrowned Queens Institute for Research and Education on Women, Inc. Normally, a program of this sort would include an interviewer and interviewees. But what we've decided to do in a somewhat of a takeoff from that usual format is to have a conversation together so that we can share with the audience what the Uncrowned Queens is about, something about our history, our programs, and our future programs.
Yes, and I think it's a good opportunity for us to do that because we've gotten a lot of national as well as international exposure on the Uncrowned Queens Institute, primarily through its signature webpage at www.uncrownedqueens.com, and also through a series of books we have written, Uncrowned Queens, African American Women, Community Builders of Western New York. And so this would give us an opportunity to talk a little more casually about who we are, how we got started, and so forth.
We started in 1999. There was a group that had organized called the Women's Pavilion 2001. And the purpose of that group was to develop projects to celebrate the centennial of the Pan American Exposition of 1901 here in Buffalo. And so we joined that group of women, and we developed the project that we ultimately called Uncrowned Queens to celebrate and recognize and honor the history of African-American women, and particularly those women initially who were part of the Pan-American experience in 1901.
And we thought that we would use the term Uncrowned Queens to describe the project, primarily because of some research that I've been working on a woman by the name of Drusilla Dungy Houston, who lived in Oklahoma, who in 1917 wrote a poem called America's Uncrowned Queens. And we were so taken with that because the initial stanzas of the poem really pointed out that women had done an extraordinary job in building the communities, building their homes, making it a safe place for their families. And this was particularly poignant because the poem was written during the Jim Crow era in Oklahoma. And few people may know it, but during that time, the Ku Klux Klan had a very, very, very strong presence in Oklahoma. So Drusilla Dungy Houston was really writing about the challenges that black men, for example, were facing, and black women as well. But she saw black women as really those uncrowned queens who were working to make sure that there was a safe environment.
And Peggy, let's underscore the Uncrowned Queens again and why we chose that title and what it symbolizes, because so very often people ask us, why did you choose Uncrowned Queens? And we've just talked about that. But what does it really mean? Why Uncrowned Queens? Why not some other word like, unsung heroines? Because that term has been bandied around too.
But The term Uncrowned Queen really speaks to the fact that women in communities the world over, whether they're African American, Scottish, or Irish immigrants, or what have you, women have played a key role in making sure that the communities survive. And these are women whose names are not known in the history books. They are women who historians have really not just glossed over, but have not initiated the kind of research that would even delve into their histories. So they're really people who have fallen in the gap, so to say, in the historical cracks. And so by labeling them Uncrowned Queens, we saw ourselves as giving them their crown through recognizing them through their photos and their biographical sketches and putting them in a place that the whole world could see. Otherwise, they would never be known of.
And when I think about the Uncrowned Queens that we have currently on our website, and as you mentioned in a number of the books that we've written about them, those women, the women who are the community builders and whose history perhaps had gotten lost or had not really been captured, those women are women like Eva Knowles, for example, the first African-American to receive her nursing degree here in Buffalo in the early 1940s, or Mary Talbert, who was one of the protesters of the Pan American Exposition and who was a woman who led the anti-lynching campaign of the NAACP in the 1920s and the 19-teens, and who was also one of the presidents of the National Association of Colored Women. I think about the church women, those women who, because they could not access the pulpit in the churches because men did not see women as being preachers, built their own churches. A woman like Mrs. Amos, or Pastor Amos, I think she would be called, who in the 50s built her own church in Lackawanna, New York. Can you think of some other uncrowned queens that we might want to share?
The uncrowned queens that I really have a bead on and that I really think about a lot are those women who, like ourselves, work to put organizations together, for example, from scratch. Women like Barbara Dennis, who has been, deeply involved in mental health issues, not only for some of her children, but also for women and men in general. She put together an organization called MOTIC maybe 20 years ago, and recently, I think last year, had a major celebration at the Langston Hughes Institute. And there's Laura Jackson, who passed away a couple of years ago, who was also a woman who was fighting to make sure that there was justice for young people. And also she was interested in working with women whose children had been murdered in homicides and put together an organization and really did some work nationally. And so there are numerous women like that who we would never hear of. We would never know their stories. We would never know the impact that they made on their communities, and they surely did.
Yes, absolutely. And at this point, we have over 1,000 women's biographies on our website. But we also have other interesting features on the website that are important to our Uncrowned Queens Institute project.
One of the things I think that is important I'll point out is that with these women, and I think this is one of the things we're most proud of, with these women is the fact that many, if not most of these women, never wrote anything about themselves. They never talked about themselves. In fact, they were kind of squeamish about talking about themselves. And that's why we were very fortunate that the community nominated them, because they may never have stepped forward. And so on our poetry page, for example, we have instances where these women shared with us their writings, things they had never shared before, their thoughts and their ideas. So it's really the first time that you can see some of the writings of people that history would have forgotten. And that's been quite a treasure for us, so that on our poetry section, you can see some really very fine pieces of writing that people have engaged in.
And you mentioned something just now that's really very important, and that is you said that the community nominated these women. And that's a major part of what we're doing with this project, is that we're engaging and involving a community in identifying and pulling together the histories of these women and providing that information to us to put on the website. So it's not just us going out and doing historical research, but it's a whole community that has said to us, here are women that we feel very strongly about, who have been our community builders, and we don't want to have them forgotten. And those women, their biographies and their histories have been supplied by members of the community, men, women, children, who really have made this project what it is, because we couldn't have done this without their involvement and without their trust that we would take this really sacred material and we would handle it with the dignity and with the importance that it deserves.
And that really takes us to, a discussion about the Uncrowned Queens model and what that really is. And by having a community, and this is what I think really distinguishes Uncrowned Queens from a lot of other history projects, both at universities that are university-based and private entities, and that is the fact that the model for the Uncrowned Queens that we have developed is a model that will allow a community to speak to itself about itself collectively and individually. And in doing that, we have been able to tell the stories of these women one person at a time. And by telling these stories, that is, in the words of the individuals themselves and the communities, we have essentially engaged a community in telling its own story one person at a time. And when you see women telling their stories, phenomenal things come out. We're able to create a fabric of the history of a region, one person at a time. Thus, the Uncrowned Queens model is primarily a regional model that we're planning to replicate across the country to show individual regions that they have a story, and that the story is in the mouths of many of the women, and that if we can go beneath the radar and pick up those stories, historians will be astounded even in terms of realizing what it is that they have missed.
And do you remember that night in February 2001 when we launched this project? Even though we started working on it in 1999, in February is when we launched the website and we had a major reception that over 200 people attended, many of them Uncrowned Queens who are still living and who were part of that initial launch. And it was so exciting to have that kind of community response. The community was vibrant. They were excited. And it was an icy night. Remember Sly?
It was a very icy night, and people came in wheelchairs.
Yes.
They came in walkers. They came with canes, which could barely support them on that ice. And then many of them had to walk up this very high ramp to the Butler Mansion here in Buffalo on Delaware Avenue. And I might say that it really was close to 400 people who came. And the audience, it was packed in that room downstairs. Yeah. The provost for the university, yes, at Buffalo was there. Vice presidents at the university were there. And when we set up the screen, this is the thing that I remember the most. When we set up the screen and the faces of these women appeared one by one, it was like a gasp from the audience. And there was a statement that we used later that we heard women saying to themselves and then out loud, how did we get up on there? Mm-hmm. And then that's when I think we really realized that technology was pivotal in us being able to do this. And so maybe you might talk about how we frame that from a technological framework.
Well, sure, but I wanted to stay with this for just a minute because, mm-hmm, I think it's also important, another hallmark of the community involvement that has made this project so exciting and so successful has been the partnerships that we established,
yes,
with other groups. So even from that first launch, remember we had the Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority,
exactly,
we had the NAACP, we had the Women's Pavilion Pan Am 2001, we had the Lynx Organization, and we had the University of Buffalo that all co-sponsored that,
yes,
event and came as members of our partnership to support what it is we were doing. And that has been another piece of this whole project, mm-hmm, that has really been, I think, also exceptional. And again, as you said, distinguishes us, I think, from other projects because we're so community-based and so community-aligned with organizations as well as with individuals.
We should also say, too, that the political sphere was very well represented that night, too. Remembering Crystal Peoples, who was in the Erie County Legislature at the time, and who's now in the New York State Senate representing Buffalo, a Democrat, and has been one of our staunch supporters. And there were others there. Members of our board were there. And so it was really quite a night. I remember feeling like I was levitating for several days after that. But so let's go on and talk a little bit about this Technopedia.
Right. Exactly.
Because when we saw these people's reaction to seeing themselves online, what really became fascinating for us was how now, since we had done this and we had used technology to make this major display of this information, what did we need to do to bridge the digital divide? Because clearly, I think that was the point at which we knew we had stepped across a line into another medium in terms of how we could get this information out. It was no longer relying heavily on a book culture, but now we have moved into technology. And in fact, you coined the term technopedia. I don't like to give you the credit for it like that, but I guess
but thank you. I was going
to
take the credit myself because the technopedia idea came as I looked at the growing list of women who were on the site and looked at the biographical or the alphabetical list of those women. And it dawned on me that here was, in a sense, a growing encyclopedia, but because of the technology, which made it dynamic, which made it possible for us to go in and change mm-hmm. and update those biographies, that this was more than an encyclopedia, that mm-hmm. this was really a technopedia. And so that's how the term occurred to me. And we should say that there's some unexpected, I think, consequences of this project as we have found and we've discovered, and particularly with the technopedia, that we find that people are using the information from the biographies to use as information for constructing obituaries, to use as information for enhancing resumes or for enhancing portfolios, to use for information for awards events. And so that technopedia, while it also is certainly the provides the historical information that we envisioned it would provide, it also has had that consequence of being, again, a very dynamic mm-hmm. kind of instrument because people use it for so many other kinds of things that we just didn't envision at the time. The response from the community, the fact that there was so much work to be done in terms of capturing these women's biographies and continues to be done, really led us to know that we could not sunset in 2002 when the Women's Pavilion sunset. And so our goal and our mission in terms of establishing the Uncrowned Queens Institute for Research and Education on Women, Inc., was to continue the work that we began as a project and to make this into an organization that would collect, retrieve, and preserve and disseminate the histories of African-American women initially. But as you've mentioned, that this is a model that certainly can be replicated by any ethnic group in any community.
And let us conclude by saying again, go to our webpage at www.uncrownedqueens.com. And when you get there, check out the entire webpage and feel free to send us a message. And the next time, in a few months from now that you go back to the webpage, we'll see that it's been totally transformed. You'll be able to talk with us, you'll be able to see us, and you'll be able to do a number of exciting things. So have a great day, and it's been wonderful talking to you.